Following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's Jason, and it is again Tuesday night, 8 Central, eight Eastern, and it's time for the Pulse Gamecast. We're on episode 48, and our broadcast date is 10/28 of 2014. That puts us at episode 48, and for those of you who've been keeping track, that gives you one more episode to get those screenshots in that we want, with the write-ups for our incredibly awesome, super fantabulous Adra explicative giveaway of the Carcarious headphones that every one of you knows that you want. But what we really want is that feedback. We want to know which episodes you guys liked, what you enjoyed hearing about, what you enjoyed playing, where we connected with you, and we want to see those write-ups because we know, if nothing else, sarcasm being the lowest form of wit, we're going to get a lot of that. So please send it back, send it in to us. We've been waiting on them. We've been getting a bunch, but there's still room for more. We want to hear you guys talk about what you liked most about the last year of our recordings. And we're running right up on it now with episode 48. So let's talk about me riding solo tonight. Poor Gray looks like he's still suffering from the throat spasms. And he's eventually going to get over whatever he's got. I think he's somewhere near southern the United States, so there's no telling. There's porous borders and lots of Ebola. There's just absolutely no knowing what poor Gray got. But he did send us an update on what he's been doing this week. He reloaded, resubbed, and pre-ordered the new SWTOR expansion. Got his big 12 by XP on class missions, which he thinks is super-duper awesome. Leveled up to 16 on the completion of the Sith starter planet, which is actually, that is pretty freaking awesome, because I mean, it's those first levels that kind of are grindy, you know. Once you've played at least two of every one of the different classes there are, both light and dark side, that'll get kind of grindy. So 12 by XP on your class missions pretty much just ranks you right up there. And if you can add anything on top of that, I don't know if they stack, but if you can add anything on top of that, knocking out your first 20, 22 levels is pretty awesome. Let's go ahead and take a look. What have I been doing? Well, I updated my EQ2 for the All Hallows event, but unfortunately, I have not played it. I also updated the World of Tanks for the Fury event. For those of you who keep up with World of Tanks, the Fury movie that came out, they actually produced a... They went hand in hand, and when Fury came out, World of Tanks did a big, you know, episode where you could watch that through their portal, and they invited people to go see it on an event and everything. But unfortunately, I didn't get to play that yet either. I've been playing the massive online business simulator, but y'all have heard a lot about that, so we'll move on. Let's say that the EQ2 event is really awesome. If you haven't tried it, you need to. It will require some updates. So go ahead and do your updating on the EQ2 and log in. It's a lot of fun. There's races. It's a lot like the Star Wars events. I mean, the Star Trek events. And basically what you do is there's races, there's missions, and there's only prizes where I think one year I got the arrow through the head, the Steve Martin arrow through the head is one of my characters wearing. And there's masks, big, huge goblin masks, fiery skeleton masks, things like that. You run around and trick or treat from the vendors inside the city. And then there's also smashing pumpkins and quite a few things. Some of these are epic level raids that you can get really nice loot from. And like I said, these are only drops, and you would really, really like having this stuff mounted in your house for those of you here, the decorators like me. But again, they're having the All Hallows thing on EQ2. They're also having it on EQ1. It's a big EverQuest thing. A lot of fun to play. Get up your friends and hit up those medium to high population servers and have some fun. So let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about the news. Well, it's going to be a, I don't know, I want to call it a LucasArts extravaganza here, but we started off with Gray talking about SWTOR, so I figured I'd just roll on in with zombies in Star Wars. For those of you who haven't played it, there is an iOS slash Android game called Star Wars Commander, a la Clash of Clans, I guess, if you know what that is. Works on iOS and Android, but it's a Star Wars themed Clash of Clans. They're going to have all new unit types for this Halloween event starting on the 30th. You'll be able to get Death Troopers, and they'll have them in all different flavors. Death Troopers, Stormtrooper, Death Scout Troopers, Heavy Death Troopers, and apparently some airstrike ships such as the Rebel Hawk HWK-290 and the Empire Strike VT-49, which is kind of much cooler looking. But they both drop firebombs, which is not bad at all. Got to do something to get rid of them zombies. But if you'll take a look at some of the art, I haven't actually loaded it back up onto my Android. I played it for a little while. I enjoyed it. But it's a strategy game, and it's a lot of fun to play. So if you're into strategy games and Star Wars is your thing, definitely check this out. It's pretty cool. And it's Halloween themed. And who doesn't enjoy having the All Hallows theme in whatever game they happen to be playing this week? And I don't know. I guess you could say that the Death Troopers thing is pretty cool. A lot of people are really, you know, the 31 days of Halloween with sci-fi and, you know, all your Skinemax and all those people are producing all their Halloween things. It just kind of fits in. So go ahead and check it out. Moving on, we can go ahead and talk about SharePlay. For those of you who know, me and Gray both have PS3s, but because of where we sit in the world, we don't have PS4s. However, if either one of us strikes it big, I promise we'll buy the other one a PS4 and check this stuff out, because SharePlay rocks. Basically, what they did after crashing the system earlier this morning and bringing it back up, and I'm talking about PSN, because of SharePlay, basically you're demoing your game to a friend. Now, what goes on here is, to demo it, you have to have a PSN account. But it's sort of like, for those of you who are tech savvy and know what a webinar is or a webcast or, you know, teleconferencing in and giving someone control, that's really what's going on here. They've taken the PS Vita and the PSP remote play one step further is what they've really done here. Because what you do is basically you initiate a connection with a friend after you've started a game, and then they can take over your controller, just sort of like handing over your mouse and keyboard to another person. And I've read a couple of write-ups, but the Game Zone write-up was a pretty good one right here by Mike, what's his name, we'll just call him Mike. Mike, good review. Basically, what he was talking about here is, like most of us, he has his PS4 on wireless, and he has two friends that he tried it with, one in Florida, one in New York. The one in Florida, he initially tried to connect with, and now he's not saying where he lives. So when he said Florida, I was under the assumption he means in the same state, because it sounded like, well, he lives in Florida like I do. But that being the assumption, I don't know that for a fact, Mr. Mike, he initiates it, the share, with a wireless connection on his end and his friend on a wired connection. And there's different settings here. You can have like a high setting and a medium setting for how the spectator views your screen. So, and I'm guessing that that's just bandwidth oriented and nothing else. So he initiates it. Other guy gets really crappy reception. So the other guy is on wire. He goes on wire and reinitiates it in low, and the guy gets really good reception, so he reinitiates the share on high. And he said, and I quote, like I said, he did it with two different people. He did it with his friend in Florida and his friend in New York, and apparently distance wasn't an issue, but bandwidth was. So you want to open it up as big as you can get it, obviously with 50 megabits and better flying off the handle, like at ludicrous speed, as he mentioned in here. It shouldn't be that big of an issue if you have broadband. If it's during sharing hours, however, you know, it's probably going to affect you. So assume that you're going to play on medium. Now, here's the drawbacks. He said that this is not a split second. Basically, it's not like a remote control of the hardware. You're getting a relay off of a more like proxy servers. you're getting a relay off of someone else's, so there's no split second timing. So things like he played Spelunky and any fighting games like Tekken or, you know, any of those that require split second timing, you're going to fail. Okay. Now, the reason I mention this is because there's also a feature where you can multiplayer. You know, basically, if you have a two-player game on your computer, the other person can play the second controller. And that's cool for games that don't require split-second timing. So if y'all are, like, you know, doing massively online shooters or, you know, RPGs or something like that where you have time to make your choices and it's not absolutely splendiferously important that you make that split-second headshot, you're okay. But if not, this is going to get frustrating until there's just massive bandwidth out there. Now, that being said, this is really awesome for people who want to demo games. You know, like say you got a buddy and you play Destiny and you've been trying to get him and he's on the line and he's just one of those guys that won't buy it unless he plays. He didn't have Redbox close by or something like that. Or you've got, you know, a game that he just, you know, can't get anywhere else, sports game or something like that. You can share this with him, demo it with him, and if they like it, man, you know, they're going to go out and buy it. Now both of you all have the game. You can play online like normal with no lag. However, this is how, you know, you get that gateway drug going on. You say, I want you to play this. Try this out. This is how you do it. Now, to initiate, you have to have a PSN and to share a PSN account. And to share, do multiplayer, both of you have to have an account. So the person who is sharing has to have the account. And if you want to play multiplayer, both of you have to have an account. So just keep that in mind. But, I mean, honestly, this is a really big step forward in game. I don't want to call it advertising. It's a good game model. Doing all the business stuff that I'm in, this is how I see the world now. So getting someone else to do your footwork and, you know, word of mouth advertising is really awesome here. And, you know, PS4 is taking a big step forward. Not having an Xbox, I don't know if they're, you know, if Xbox has already implemented this type of gaming. I haven't heard about it, if they have. And if they have, like I said, write us in, tweet, you know, to us. Hey, yeah, they've got this, you know, thing. You have to have a Xbox membership, gold membership or whatever. But I'd like to hear about that, because again, I have lots of friends who have Xboxes, but unfortunately they live a little ways away, so I don't have a chance to converse with them as much as Gray and I do about our PS3s and the PS4 network that we so desperately want to become part of. Maybe Christmas will roll around, or, you know, Black Friday will, I don't know, maybe a armored van full of money will crash out in front of my house. It's always been one of my fantasies. Anyway, PS4 Share Play. Take a look at it. It's something wonderful to try if you have it. Moving on, I said that we were going to continue with our LucasArts extravaganza. For those of you who know Gray and I, we like old games. You name old games, we like old games. We talk about a lot of the old RPGs, you know, and when we're talking about the old RPGs, we're talking about early 90s and mid 90s, you know, video games that we look upon with nostalgia. And I know you haven't gone an episode without hearing me go on about Star Wars Galaxies. Well, X-Wing and TIE Fighter were two of the best, in fact, still to this day, remain two of the best space simulators ever created, ranking up there with the original Wing Commander, which of now they have RSI Industries, ranking up there with, you know, well, you name it, any space simulator that was made. But that being said, it only worked on the old P2s, I believe, is when they stopped making it. It might have been in the P3 series. But yeah, because TIE Fighter was 94, 95, I think. So late P3s, back when Voodoo was still a card, not a computer. So that is just a slice of nostalgia. Well, GOG, Good Old Games, which we've talked about before on the show, they've produced a lot of the older RPGs, has really got in tight with the old LucasArts. And so they're bringing back a buttload of LucasArts games. Leading the charge is X-Wing and TIE Fighter. And not just X-Wing and TIE Fighter, but X-Wing and TIE Fighter each for $10 with all of the expansions that they shipped with to the last day that they were out there. So what you get with the special edition TIE Fighter is you get TIE Fighter and Star Wars TIE Fighter, Defender of the Empire, both the 94 and 98 versions. and you get Star Wars X-Wing Collector CD-ROM and both Tour of Duty expansion and the Imperial Pursuit B-Wing. So, wow. I mean, that's just everything that was... I mean, that was everything that was Skrusha back in the day, dude. I mean, I had a... what was that? A Thrustmaster? Thrustmaster controller, I think, was the name of it. And then later on, the SciTech, you know? Those were the bombs, man. And I had both of those controllers just to play this one game. I mean, I had, you know, the... And people are like, oh, you're buying that for plane sims. No, no, sir. No. I had those strictly for X-Wing and TIE Fighter. And Star Wars Galaxies figured that X-Wing and TIE Fighter being the big thing that they were, because remember, Star Wars Galaxies came out much later. When they had jumped to Lightspeed and incorporated a modern version of X-Wing and TIE Fighter into their, you know, RPG universe, making large space battles possible, not just single player, but, you know, multiplayer campaign battles, including capital missions where and PvP, deep space missions, and even, what do you call them, where you go and recon and pick up and mine nodes in outer space, and then finally multiplayer ships. That all came from X-Wing and TIE Fighter. This was the progenitor of all things badass Star Wars. So this is something you should check out. And at $10 a piece, you really can't afford not to. It's $20 and you have every one of these, and they work on modern computers. You don't have to tweak with them or screw with them or anything. They work on modern i7s, i5s. You just really can't beat it. So if you're a LucasArts fan, especially if you're a TIE Fighter and X-Wing fan, definitely go check these bad boys out. It's worth every bit of it. And let's see. The graphics have been updated, by the way, just for those of you who are wondering. It's not only just the original graphics, they've updated the graphics just a touch so that they don't look quite as blocky and pixelated. So good things. Good things. And you can get them right now, as of today, at GOG. So go check that out. Good old games. That's the boom. Okay. Now, I do believe at this point, normally, Gray would be putting out something really cool. So let's all take a moment. Okay, thanks, Gray. That was awesome. And we're going to go back now and move on to geeky stuff. Geeky stuff. That's normally where I throw out really, really super duper awesome tabletop gaming news and tell you something that's new and modern and Kickstarter-ish and, you know, three-dimensionally resin out there. But this time I found something. And I want to say I was on Kotaku when I found this. I can't remember. It might have been Nag or Joystick or one of the ones. But anyway, one of the things, again, about nostalgia is that it's really, really good through the lenses of time. You're like, oh, man, that game was the one. Well, there are certain games that they may not make anymore, or at least it's hard to find, because with the internet being what it is, it's really kind of hard to have a game that's out of print anymore. It's really easy to find people who have translated it to PDF or some type of digital, you know, medium, and then spread it back out. Well, they listed the greatest out of print tabletop RPGs that they still love, and I believe it was at io9.com, and I just couldn't believe the first five were all games that I dearly loved and played. And y'all have heard me talk about the World of Arduin before, when I was talking to Gray, because we both played, you know, second level or second edition campaigns, and we both, you know, cut our teeth on first edition. But Arduin was a world all unto its own. It was a British based gaming company, I think, and we all remember the British modules as being some of the best modules out there from back in the day, from the original Dungeons and Dragons. But Arduin produced a thing called the Arduin Grimoire, and I remember being introduced to this the first time I went to Atlanta to meet my wife's friends. Back then we were just dating, but this one guy that I knew had invested at age 14. His dad gave him 10 grand to invest how he wanted to, and the son of a bitch, he put it all in Cisco, back when Cisco was like a few bucks a share. And so now this guy is my hero, because he lives in downtown Atlanta in like a three-story house, just because he can, not because he has to. And a wonderful guy, played EverQuest with him for years, but he's the one who introduced me to Arduin. And I got down and he was like, man, you got to check out this Arduin. Look at this. And he showed it to me. And it had these things called like moon wasps. And I mean, just the stats on these things were scary. They could like move, you know, 48 feet in a second. And they, you know, had armor class, to hit armor class zero was like 4, you know? I mean, they just like pierced paladin plate like it wasn't there. And then they laid these eggs that if you had to make a saving throw versus death, or no, saving throw versus coma, and you went to a coma, and then their progenitors or whatever they hatched out of the eggs ate its way out of you, and you had to make a save versus death, be totally killed immediately, instantly killed with no resurrection. So it's just like, and that's like one of the small creatures from Arduin. So needless to say, this was a higher level campaign world, but it was a lot of fun. And although they originally had gone through some copyright issues that nothing, you know, a little blotter and some whiteout wouldn't fix, it was still one of the greatest additions to Dungeons and Dragons that had ever existed, and the hand-drawn art on the front of everything just made it that much better. Second on the list was Paranoia. For those of you who've never played Paranoia, it's an Orwellian future where the computer controls all of humanity, and it separates humanity by levels of color. So, and it goes by the rainbow, you know, and obviously the lowest being red, and second highest being orange, and yellow, green, blue, and you know, anything, you can't go above your level in color. And one of the first rules is that there's no such thing as secret societies, and if you are part of a secret society, it's punishable by death. And there's no such thing as mutants, and if you found out to be a mutant, it's punishable by death. Well, you start the game by rolling up which secret society you belong to and what your mutant power is, and pretty much the entire game is trying to figure out what the other person's mutant power is, what secret society they belong to, getting them to do something that gets them killed. And you have a clone, or so many clones, it's been a while since I played. But this evolved into one of the first LARP games ever. Paranoia was one of the greatest LARP games that ever existed because it's so funny. And like you're cobbled together, a group of people are cobbled together to do a mission. And the mission is like go repair a faulty generator in a section of town. Well, the section is usually outside your color scheme, so you have to figure out how to get your color scheme at the same time not breaking the rules. One person's a videographer, another person's the praise the computer, what they call a morale officer, and you'll have an instantaneous praise the computer party. And if you don't praise the computer, well, that's punishable by death too. So as you can tell, it's a really funny game. It's meant to be funny. And it was a lot of fun when it was made. I can't imagine that it's gotten any less so. But Paranoia was a great game. So any chance you get, check that out. I heard they're going to reproduce that one. So maybe they'll bring it back online, and we'll see more of that at some of the cons. The original Star Wars in the D6 mode, where you rolled like a buttload of D6s, was one of the better ones. That's not the new Epic version they have now. This is the West End games where... you know, and the random bounce chart for the plasma grenade was something else. Let me tell you, I can't tell you how many times everybody in my group would go, oh God, she's got a thermite grenade, and they'd run. So, God bless that game. And finally, my favorite of all time, Marvel Super Heroes, which was based on the face rip form of build your character up. You could pretty much create any character you could imagine in your head using these rules. And we had more fun creating characters than we did actually playing them. But the game system was real easy to master, and it was a lot of fun, and it could go from menial to epic instantaneously. So it was nothing to see Aunt May kill Galactus by accidentally plugging in the vacuum cleaner into the wrong outlet, you know, and doing the bloom thing where this hits that and falls that, and it's pretty good. So anyway, it was a really good system. It was just so awesome. The chart was everything. As long as you had the chart in the back, you could play the game. It didn't matter. But I remember Scrambler and the Gray Mouser and quite a few of the other characters that we had rolling around back in the day. So for all my friends who are out there who may or may not listen to my podcast, I remember you guys. That was a lot of fun. And they also listed 5th Age, Dragonlance. Not a huge 5th Age fan, truthfully speaking. However, I did want to do a hats off. DC Adventures RPG, I did not know this, based their entire RPG system off of Mutants and Masterminds, which, if I'm not mistaken, was the brainchild of one of my personal friends, Zaki. He was quite the man. Created the 100-sided die down here in Biloxi, Mississippi. He sponsored our gaming group twice. And when him and his wife split up, she got half of his holdings. And she opened up a card business, which is still there, I think, on the Biloxi Gulf Coast. And then he had a warehouse where he distributed Mutants and Masterminds and quite a other few games. He developed many things besides the 100-sided die and Mutants and Masterminds. But was a really, really good... really, really good system. So, you know, kudos for that. They listed Dragon Quest and Chill. And I think Gray knew a little bit about Chill. Chill was really good. It was I don't know, I want to call it X-Files. It was Cthulhu-ish. You still had insanity points, but it was really important for the narrator to be a good narrator. And as long as they made it creepy, the game was fun. And I remember the very first adventure that you go on had you like somewhere in New Mexico or something like that. And it was a really, I just did that one adventure, hooked us for a long time. I wasn't good enough narrator to really extend that storytelling capability, but the system itself worked well. It was a good system. I don't know why Chill really didn't last, but I know the original Chill first edition was excerpts were done by Elvira. I had the second edition, but it, like I said, a lot of fun. And then a few other people mentioned, some honorable mentions, Phoenix Command, the Illuminati card game, different ones. But at the very bottom was Steve Jackson's Car Wars, and that was a lot of fun too, where it developed the rules for car combat. And basically you just take a car, be it compact, mid-class, luxury, you know, van, truck. They even had later on boats and planes and motorcycles. But you'd add armor and weapons, and then you could literally roll, and they had physics, kind of a physics engine for it. And you had levels, and you know, you could go up or down levels and shooting at angles. They had mines, machine guns, lasers, you name it, flamethrowers, everything, and different types of armor. And it was a real physics-based game, because your car could only have a certain size engine with so much armor on it. And they produced codexes every year where you could add to it. I think it was called the Uncle Mike series. But it was by Steve Jackson Games. And later on, we would actually modify the rules and create our own rulers and use Hot Wheels cars with parts glued to them. And if you can make the car look like what you wanted it to, that it followed the game rules. That was a lot of fun. We played that at cons, believe it or not. That was something exceptional. So Steve Jackson Games and Car Wars. Traveler got a mention, so did Star Frontiers. And it's just, I mean, these are all the best games. Paranoia Chill, Car Wars, even Warhammer Fantasy, the original, got an honorable mention in there because it's so different than their new third edition rules, because it had the career paths. So, again, a little trip down memory lane there for anybody who wanted to not put any money in Kickstarter this week and just talk about things that we used to love. I hope you got some chill bumps, a little tear in your eye. You're going to go digging back through your closet over at Mom's house and see if you can't find that old book that's been laying inside with all the pages yellowed and crinkled up. But that's really what this is about. It's making those connections with the old stuff and the friends that you played it with. So I hope y'all enjoyed that. And again, I hope that gives you a jump point for you to do some screenshots and some write-ups and send them in. And I get your name in the hat for the drawing. Not this episode, not next episode, but the episode after. On Respec 50, we are going to pick a winner. So y'all help us out. Make this easy on us. Make it hard on us. Send us a bunch of entries. We've got quite a few, but we want a bunch. I mean, we want to say, yeah, we got like over 200 entries. We got over 300 entries. I haven't counted how many we've looked at so far, but they've been coming in at a pace that we can actually keep up with, which is kind of sad. You guys need to like really bombard us. Throw your hat in the ring. Again, Carcarious headset, works on Xbox 360 and a PC. Really good headset made by Razer. Can't go wrong there. Always nice to have a backup if you already got something. But this is your chance to get your name in the books, because we're going to use whatever you send us. Remember, if you don't want your name mentioned, to tell us. But if you do, you know, go ahead and tell us that as well, because we're going, the winning entry is going to get mentioned, and we're going to talk about it, and I might even pick on it a little bit. But we really, really enjoy hearing from you guys. It's what makes us do this stuff. So, finishing up, I'm glad y'all are listening to us this week. Blacklace is going to have our information on the way out. I'm Jason. You can find me on PlayStation Network, Steam, and Raptor under JAYSYNN. And you can find my buddy Gray as Teletech, and I can't remember his last three numbers, and I'm sure one of these days I will, but right now you just got me on that one. But a good reason to go back and download another one of our episodes so that you have it. Tweet us up, hit us up, and shoot us up if you can. Join in. Y'all have a good one. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check holosuitemedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at The Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to thepulsegamecast@gmail.com.